You are invited as we delve into the unhinged.
Well, it ain't working now, Frank.
I mean, the movie's live.
The grotesque.
Let me lick it. Lick it.
And the bizarre.
Who calls me from out of the pit?
Whether you asked for it or not, this is Late Night Psychorama.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is Late Night Psychorama, just a little show where three of us take two random horror movies from the drive-in era, the exploitation movie era, kind of being from like the mid to late 60s all the way to like the mid 80s, or mostly the early 80s, but focus primarily on the 70s. Keep in mind, this is nothing academic or scholarly. This is just three people who really enjoy these type of things, just talking about them. The best way to describe it, I'd say, is if you ever went to one of those revival theaters and saw an old movie and then you walked out and you saw those just terminal dweebs just talking about it outside because they have really nothing else to do with their lives. Imagine that captured into the internet where other dweebs can listen to it. There's going to be spoilers, banter, segues, etc., etc. You get the idea. So, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Joe.
And I'm Andrew.
And what movies are we doing tonight, Joe?
Tonight we are doing Dr. Death.
These women have just seen their doctor. Dr. Death. He stalks the city through the dark of night.
I think somebody's coming toward my apartment.
He has powers more terrible than any man who ever lived. Don't answer your doorbell.
What do you want?
It may be Dr. Death making a house call. Rated R.
Also titled Dr. Death, Seeker of Souls. And we are doing The House with Laughing Windows.
Do you know what I saw a few days ago? I went to the movie theaters and I saw Overlord, World War II Nazi experiment monster film.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really bad. Like, really bad. Like just very lazy paint-by-numbers bad. Not even, like, fun bad. And the worst part about it is it was a bit of a ripoff of a movie that came out about 5 or 6 years ago called Frankenstein's Army. Have you seen that?
No.
Okay. It's a straight-to-video, found footage horror movie. And that's not really my thing. I'm kind of like a dickhead purist that sticks with like the golden age. But I saw that, and despite its flaws, which it has plenty, it's actually like a really fun movie. And imagine it's Russians in World War II fighting Germans. They get a secret mission to go to this church. Unbeknownst to them, only one person knows the real reason for the mission, and it's to capture the grandson of Frankenstein, who is working for the Nazis, creating these like war machine monsters. But the war machine monsters look like they're villains from Ultraman or Inframan after they discovered death metal. And they're like, they look ludicrous and everything, but the movie has a grim tone, like Cross of Iron. And no matter how like insane the monsters get, they always like play them straight. And like I said, the movie has its problems, but the fact that it's like such a labor of love as well, like you can easily forgive it. And it does like have some like lots of cool moments in it, and I recommend it to everybody.
This is Frankenstein's Army, not Overlord.
No, Overlord's the movie that was made for like 70 times the budget and has a quarter of the imagination and energy of this. Like, you can tell this was something a bunch of people made in their backyard.
I remember seeing something like, I think I saw bits and pieces of Frankenstein's Army. That came out how long ago? Like, it was like 2000s, right?
2013.
Okay.
It was like a straight-to-video movie.
Yeah.
It wasn't like something in the
No. Yeah, I remember, but I remember seeing something like that.
I'll give it a whirl.
I would recommend it. Like I said, don't set your expectations super high.
I never do that anymore.
Yeah. So then you're in business. But like, yeah, there's a lot of fun and the monsters are they're really cool. Besides that, can you guys hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Okay, this mic's kind of just keeps dipping down and making me paranoid.
Yeah, you have to tighten it and whatnot. They see all those knobs, they do stuff.
Oh, perfect. I thought that was just flair.
Yeah.
Anybody else? You guys watch anything cool?
Well.
All right.
No.
All right. So.
I this week I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna watch a bunch of giallo movies since we're doing one, and I just wanted to sit down and I think I watched one, and then I just watched the whole first season of The Wire. Yeah.
Oh, so there we go. Useless. Yeah. How did you like The Wire? Have you seen it before?
No, this was the first. I really like I heard that every season's different, and I kind of just might, maybe I'll check out the other seasons, but I thought the first season was awesome, and I just kind of wanted to leave it at that.
I remember when it first came on, I didn't watch it directly, but it was one of those shows my parents were watching, so, like, I kind of, like, caught a little bit of it. The second season has, like, a grim mass death scene.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, no, not like you don't see it, but you see like the aftermath of it. It's like kind of like it got under my skin.
Yeah. I'll probably give the other seasons a whirl. But
that's how I was for like every show. Like my parents watched, you know, The Sopranos, you know, all, and like I would just like come in and out of my room and catch it like when I was a kid. Because The Wire was like, what, 2004, 2005?
I think it was even earlier than that.
Probably.
But it was, it was like early 2000s.
Yeah, like my high school.
Yeah. And the one giallo movie I actually watched was Eyeball.
How was that?
Umberto Lenzi. It was awesome. It was really awesome.
Okay. Don't say anymore. We're gonna cover that because that's been on my to-watch list forever.
Yeah.
Oh, you've never seen
I've
Eyeball?
I've never seen Eyeball.
Oh. It's like a gem.
Yeah, really yeah. People have always talked it up. There's a Giallo, four Giallo movies that Exhumed Films are playing. Is it December 9th or December 11th?
I think it's 9th. You know what?
Yeah, and
while you're talking.
I know it's Inferno, which is a loose Giallo. That's not really a Giallo.
Yeah, Inferno's not really a Giallo.
Opera. A Blade in the Dark, and I can't remember what the fourth one is, but I'm sure there's four movies going on.
It's December 9th.
Can you see what four movies they're playing?
Sure.
Inferno, Opera, and A Blade in the Dark, I am aware of.
Gave A Blade in the Dark a rewatch not too long ago.
You know what? I saw it when it first came out on DVD, and I didn't care for it too much, and now I'm game to... I mean, this was, you know, a long time ago, so I'm game to give it another...
You named the first three, right? So the fourth is Formula for a Murder.
Oh, okay. And then in New York City, right after Thanksgiving, they are playing at the Quad Cinema. They're doing a Giallo thing. They're playing Torso, Suspicious Death of a Minor, which I've never seen, The Pajama Girl Case, which I'd never seen, A Lizard in a Woman's Skin, which is the Fulci's first Giallo, which I really liked. And there's a few other ones, but most of them are ones I haven't seen before. They're like, there's like minor B-side hits of them, so it's going to be pretty fresh for me.
Cool.
Joe, you want to just get right into Dr. Death, because I'm kind of excited to talk about this.
Fred Saunders has been recently widowed after the death of his wife Laura. However, her deathbed promise to return has him seeking answers from mediums and the like, eventually crossing paths with Dr. Death, who has the ability to transfer souls to new bodies. But before long, it becomes all too apparent that Dr. Death is also capable of living up to his name.
All right. This movie is exactly what I wanted it to be. It's ludicrous. It's a cheapo horror romp. It's got a hammy evil villain, deformed assistant, ridiculous kills, implausible plotting, campy gel lighting, campy everything, pretty much. It really just wants to have fun, and it's really inviting to it. I mean, like, there's some stuff in there that, yeah, could be handled better or be snipped out. But overall, like, for, like, if you're one of those people that have to see, like, every 70s horror movie like me, this is one of those, like, surprise little hidden gems that, and it's perfect to watch at, like, 1 a.m. when you're just, like, half awake and you're in that weird haze. That's when these movies play best, in my book.
You're right there, Joe.
Yeah, I was having a little fit because I forgot that in my introduction, I forgot I wanted to throw in some stupid line about him and his red gel backlighting that he is always with.
Yeah, he always, there's, it's either, and sometimes it's green, but for the most part, and this guy has the most capable assistant of all the henchmen of all the movies we watched.
Thor. Yeah,
he is definitely the most imposing, and he's actually, like, not a dumbass. He gets shit done. He kills people. Every single one of these movies, these guys, like, fuck something up, and the movie falls out. Well, of the
Thor. One time he didn't even have to kill anyone. He just chased someone, and they killed themselves.
Oh, yeah. That's how good he is.
Thor cannot be blamed for anything.
No.
Other than maybe objecting to the doctor telling him to go make the people go away when he should have just kept the door closed.
Yeah, that was bad. He probably just figured there was just one person there that he could wipe out, and then all of a sudden he sees four.
Curiosity got the best of him.
So did you, I know, like, you and I watched this, like, however many years ago.
Let me cut to the theme of this double feature. These are both movies I watched years and years and years ago and could not remember a single thing about them except for the fact that I did like them. But if you ask me what they were, I couldn't. They were just, like, they deleted themselves in my memory. But I remember, like, this, that was fun. I liked it. But I couldn't tell you anything about that. And it happens rarely because I have that, you know, Rain Man minds when it comes to this stuff.
Sure.
But for some reason, my brain deletes, like, every now and then something. And, Which is not bad, because when you go back to it, it's fresh again. Andrew, did you like Dr. Death?
So, okay. So there's parts of this movie where I just thought things that were happening were great.
Yeah.
And then there were parts where I was just like, this is everything wrong with America, I felt like.
Okay, what's the
I don't know, it's just the fact that everyone, like, it's just joking, but, like, I don't know, everyone was useless in the movie. Like, extremely useless.
Yeah.
And it was so over the top. But it's, like, it's one of those movies where if I were to, someone were to ask me to, like, would you recommend it? I kind of want to say no, but I can't bring myself to do it.
Yeah. I'm everything you just, you said was, like, a fault. It was something that, like, I kind of found endearing about.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I enjoy it, because it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's not nothing amazing, or it doesn't even, like, bother to inch towards it. It's just, like, dumb fun, and it's
dumb fun, but, like, the repetitive, like, so the last, like, I don't know, half of the movie involves Dr. Death killing someone trying to get their spirit to go into this corpse.
Enter that body. I command you, enter that body.
And he does it, like, five or six times.
It's the Groundhog's Day of murder.
I was like, was this some sort of way to show that he's crazy because he's doing the same thing, expecting different results? And he's just like, every time he kills someone, he's like, get into that corpse. Yeah. I commend you.
By the time it got
enter
to
enter,
like,
that body.
By the time it got to, like, the third one, I was laughing. Like, yeah, how many times are we going to watch this
scene? I feel like
the
third one, I was laughing. And then the fifth one, I'm like, oh, God. And then, like, the sixth one was, like, funny again. But it was just...
Yeah.
That's one of the most difficult things to pull off, is to have something be funny beat it into the ground to where it's not funny, and then continue to beat it until it becomes funny again.
There's a scene where, like, you don't even watch him doing it. It's just in the outside, and you just watch Thor guarding the door, and you can see on his face that he's fucking over this.
You can hear, like, the same soundbite, too. I don't even know if it's him, the actor, saying it, the line over and over again, or if they just, like, use the same recording.
This movie had 12 shooting days, so they probably just used that, like, they just looped it.
I commend you.
Enter that body.
Yeah, if you played a drinking game with how many times he says enter that body within this one section of the film, you will be fucking mad.
I just love that he does it and then doesn't change anything about what he does. He's just like, I don't get it. I can't understand why it's not working.
Why do you reject these beautiful souls? They're beautiful. Beautiful, I tell you. Why?
I always imagined...
And we don't really ever get an explanation for it either.
No,
we
her
get
shots soul, at him. They say her soul was too strong.
Oh, yeah, that was it.
Too, like, stubborn.
But he died. Apparently not.
Well, yeah, well, because his soul at the end is more powerful than hers.
He needs a strong soul, and he can't kill anyone brutally. It has to be a slow, peaceful death. And so he comes to the determination that he has to bleed them to death. I like the montage of him trying to figure out what the problem is, and he's like writing with two hands.
Yeah.
Like that.
Oh, yeah. No. That's where I was going to. I was thinking once.
He's just like.
Just scribbling on some notepads.
Dr. Death's gig, we should get to this, is he specializes in choosing your reincarnation. What happens is. You want to die, so you die, but he takes a corpse and he puts your soul in it, and then you live again. But I always figured if that dead body was already embalmed, like, that would be a pretty shitty one to live in. Like, you'd have to get, like, a fresh body to take over. So that's what I was thinking when he couldn't get somebody into that body was because she was already, you know, buried. She was already, you know, the mortician already got to her.
What I don't get is why you have to switch bodies. So if you get stabbed.
Yeah.
And your spirit comes out, and you have to go into another already dead body. It doesn't matter how that person died, that body died. You can go into it. Why can't you just go into your fucking same body?
Yeah. I don't understand how he can reanimate. But, like, I was thinking about stuff like that, and I was like, wait a second. Because turn that off. This is Dr. Death, Seeker of Souls.
Okay, I see. That's how I get that rule.
Yeah, because, well, this movie was just so, like, it's just over-the-top camp where it's like criticizing the physics of an SNL skit.
They had to leave something for Herbert West to investigate.
Yes.
And I had a feeling that, like, I don't know, I felt like that. I was, like, imagining all the stuff that was happening in this movie on, like, paper, like, in, like, a script form. And I can see them thinking, like, oh, yeah, that's clever and that's neat and stuff like that. But then when it just doesn't hold up to scrutiny. And then the other thing where I said it was kind of like, this is everything wrong with this country, like, just this world, because the protagonist is trying to get his wife back, basically. And so Dr. Death, the best Dr. Death can do is get some other spirit into his wife's corpse.
Yeah.
And he's just like, okay. You know, he's like, fine. I only wanted the physical part of her anyway.
Well, the worst part is, I was thinking while I was watching that his wife dies, and then a super hot secretary keeps hitting on him. And right then and there, I'd be like, oh, all right, close the case on this, getting her reincarnated, and, you know, moving on already.
But no, he couldn't.
Can we get to the beginning? Because the beginning has parts I really like.
Oh, yeah, I kind of just, like, leaped for the end.
When he goes to a seance, which turns out to be...
bullshit.
Yes. After that, however, he goes to see a group called the Society of Death.
And these monks standing around a coffin.
This old guy's like, yeah, they brought my wife back. And he's like, yeah, this is awesome. Like, I'm going to, you know, this guy's going to show me who's going to bring my wife back. And then the guy reaches into the coffin that just has this rotting skeleton, pulls off this funeral dirt, and he's like, yeah, isn't she lovely?
That was incredible.
Yes, that was absolutely wonderful.
I just love that. He's like, he thinks he's just, like, bringing his wife back from the dead. And he's like, no, they just fetched me her corpse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rotting corpse.
I actually, that was in my memory bank from when we watched it.
Okay.
The first time, but I didn't consciously remember it. And then when it came up again, I was like, oh, yeah.
Well, then he finally, after these two, you know, this was botched, he finally gets to see Dr. Death, who introduces himself. First of all, he has a cool, like, makes you all do this vow of silence thing that's really neat. Mm. And then rather than just, like, have somebody die and then move their soul into another body, he performs this Wizard of Gore-esque execution. Well, I mean, like...
Where he really saws a girl in half.
Yeah, yeah. You know, this movie delivers. Like, I'm not going to complain whatsoever. It's like fun and weird and bonkers.
To bring up the Wizard of Gore point, when I was looking for stuff, I actually came across a review where somebody said, "This is what it would be like if this is what Wizard of Gore would be like if they had gotten somebody with charisma to play Montag."
Yes, yes. I really like the villain. What's the guy's name who plays him? John?
Cosidine.
Yeah. I think he's a lot of fun, and I love how, like, he...
and I think he is, you know, having fun
doing it. And the best line to, like... to explain why he's being like a campy horror villain was because he's been around for like 2,000 years. He figured out, and he's been moving body to body. And his excuse was at sometime in like the 18th century, he took the body of a theater actor. And ever since then, he's always just had that like hamminess to him.
Yeah. What I like about the main character going through all those phony seance and like the weird cult is he's finding all these places that can't actually bring his wife back. And
yes.
He goes into the theater and sees Dr. Death perform his ritual and actually bring someone back from the dead. And Dr. Death is just like, yeah, do you want me to do that for you? And he's just like, no. Just like, ultimately he was right because Dr. Death is crazy, but it was just funny, like for no reason, just... No.
I like the stumbling over the line that the volunteer.
Can we get to that? Okay. Yeah. Number one, apparently that's how it was scripted. He didn't fumble that at all. He just
scripted.
Yeah,
that way?
It was.
Okay.
He was supposed to sound like he was fumbling, but he didn't sound like he was fumbling. That's why the line sounds like he fumbled the line.
Oh shit! Yeah, I thought that was just a fuck up.
Do you know who that is?
No.
That was Mo Howard of the Three Stooges, and this was his last movie before he died. The director actually worked with the Three Stooges for years and years and years.
Yeah, I saw he was the director of this movie was like an assistant and like a lot of stuff.
Yes.
This is a first time a writer for this movie, too.
What they wanted for this movie was to make Dr. Death like a new horror character, and he wanted AIP to pick this up because he figured... this would fit next to Count Yorga and Dr. Fibes, perfect. Which honestly, I think it would. Like the
it would if it was better written, like conceptually and everything it does. But they needed a lot more oomph to make that work.
But what it lacks there, what it has that the other two don't have is the gory bits. Like this one's a lot more gruesome than Count Yorga or Dr. Fibes by far. Like it and the gore is great. There's a scene for no reason. Dr. Death gets stabbed, squirts out black blood all over this guy, and then this guy just has a meltdown. You just watch him melt. Like it's like the ending of Evil Dead.
It was an interesting transformation sequence when they do the meltdown and like. It kind of doesn't really go anywhere. It feels like he just kind of gets a little melted. Like
It
took a long time to get there.
I know, but it was worth watching. And yeah, like the gore actually looks great. Like it has these like lurid colors. It's not like A+ special effects, but it's definitely a step above I Drink Your Blood. I'll give it that. But like everything has like the blood in or the like the decaying skin and everything has this like pink kind of look to it.
Yeah, the whole movie actually has like a really nice color palette that it's put together with between lighting and, you know, fabrics chosen for the furniture and walls and whatnot. Like it's very colorful.
And like a lot of these like 70s exploitation movies, like it's filmed in LA. Mm-hmm. And it's like one of those things where even if the movie's boring, I can just look at like 70s Los Angeles.
Yeah, that was actually really cool. Yeah, it's kind of like a little time capsule.
Yeah.
That's one thing I felt they kind of wasted. You had like those couple shots of Fred in his office, and he's got that big view like in his window, and like they don't really ever call attention to it. It's just kind of like in the background.
I doubt anybody was like, in 2018, these fucking dorks are really going to appreciate this time capsule of Dr. Death in LA.
Well, maybe they should.
They should have. You're absolutely right.
To bring up, again, when I was looking for stuff, to bring up Vincent Price and AIP, et cetera, et cetera. So if you go onto the Turner Classic Movies site.
Okay, here we go.
It actually, like for the listing for this, it actually says that Vincent Price plays Dr. Death.
Oh.
Which is a fuck up, clearly. somehow they got their wires crossed with Madhouse because that's the name of the character that he plays in Madhouse. But I don't know how the hell they screwed that
up. I'm fine with this, because if this gets like 10 extra people to witness Dr. Death, I'm game for that.
Like just waiting for Vincent Price to show up. It's like, when is a real Dr. Death coming?
Yeah, yeah. Who's this guy?
Yeah. You guys were talking about how colorful this movie was, and it reminded me of the flashback where he explains.
Yeah. I like that scene. That scene
Well, I kind of am trying to figure out. Okay, so they do this. He talks about how he stumbled across the body transformation part. And he goes back into however many hundreds of years where the first time he did it. And it's he's an old guy putting his spirit into this young person's body. The young person's actually the same actor who's playing Dr. Death. And I just wonder, like, you think they filmed all that and then they're like, oops, like we have to offer like this little explanation. So he just slides in there. He's like, oh yeah, and this surf that I stole the body of happens to look like my current state.
Yeah,
like,
wow, how convenient.
And I just love that.
You know what's funny? Stuff like that, I used to kind of chuckle at and be like, oh yeah, that's ridiculous. And how they put
They didn't
care. Now in my 32 years on this planet, I've seen so much like weird, ironic shit like that happen. Yeah. Where like I'm like, yeah, I buy that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, honestly, because you're just like, obviously this is like just slipped in there, and you're like, whatever. It's okay.
But like, how many times have you read like a factoid about a serial killer or some tragic event, and you're like, wow, that like there's like a little bit of irony in one of like the little tidbits, the little trivia of it.
Sure.
And you're like, wow, what are the odds of that? But it happens. And now in when I watch these movies and my brain is like racing around trying to make excuses for every fuck up it has, like I'm more acceptable now.
Sure, that's fine.
Did you know that Chevy Chase's brother lived across the hall in college from Ted Kaczynski?
I didn't know that.
I just found that out today. The more
That's
you know.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on.
I was laughing at one point because we were talking about Vincent Price not really being in the movie. I was just laughing at the idea of him being like off camera and refusing to go on and somebody screaming at him to get into that body.
Oh.
I command you.
You know what scene?
Enter that body.
What was really cool when Dr. Death is lurking around nighttime Los Angeles looking for people to murder and try to force into that body. The girl that's on the phone with her boyfriend watching the horror movie, and like the person in the horror movie is going through the same exact thing as she is. She's like laying in bed and she can hear somebody like creeping like outside her door. And then she's like listening. She's like, wait a sec, that's not the movie. There's somebody outside the door. And of course, you know, it's Dr. Death.
Yeah.
That was pretty neat. I mean, who else would it be?
Thor? I don't know.
Can we talk about Dr. Death mailing a severed head to the protagonist?
Just to let him know he's still trying.
Yeah. It was just like
I would love
that's
to
a
see,
risky thing.
I would kind of like love to see the like in the story, just how that played out. He like chops the head off of this girl so he can try to once again get her spirit into the guy's wife's corpse. Doesn't work out, and he's just like, "Well, I got this head.
Yeah, what am I going
to
do?
Let me just mail that to this guy. Let him know I'm still working on it."
I do, especially since the main character was so fucking boring. I do like the amount of time we spend with Dr. Death. Like, it's not just it's not just like he's the bad guy and he's off like off camera doing bad things, and like the main guy has to gather everybody together to like prove what's going on and stuff. No, you get like love triangle he's in.
Towards the end, it was all Dr. Death.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, they did get that right. They just focused on him.
You know what? Much like Brotherhood of Satan, you could make a direct sequel to Dr. Death today. Like, I mean, like, he just jumps from body to body, so you can get...
Oh, yeah, they set it up that way, too.
I wonder if he's going to... at the end, Dr. Death eventually gets into the body of the person he's been trying to cram souls into because his soul is powerful enough to overcome it. And you just see her corpse leave the grave and walk towards the camera and end movie. Do you think he ever goes to the protagonist?
Well, actually, I was going to ask about that. Is this a Citizen Kane type thing where what we see in the beginning, is that actually what ends up happening?
Oh,
and
wow,
then we go back and see what happens.
Yeah.
And I just compare Dr. Death to Citizen Kane.
Does Citizen Kane have any better looking severed heads than Dr. Death?
No, I believe it has none.
Yeah, well, there we go.
Wait, the beginning was just them in the hospital, right? And
yeah, but he has like a nightmare where she comes and he's like, "Oh, wow, it's you." And then, of course, there's
the skull face.
The like skull that is superimposed, and then the credits.
Or is it a nightmare?
Yeah, we could, or it could be a premonition.
Mm. Yeah, I wasn't sure if it would hold up. I just remembered that we liked it, and watching it again, I was thoroughly entertained.
Yeah. There was this weird transition where the wife was kind of communicating with her husband and saying, "I'll be back, I'm coming back," you know? And then all of a sudden she has a change of heart and she's just like, "Just let me be.
Yeah.
And I just wondered, like, this voice sent them on this wild journey just to kind of be like, "Yeah, never mind."
Yeah, like every other woman, like...
oh, God.
Do we have any other factoids or anything?
Not really. I didn't do too much research on this. I just kind of let the movie itself entertain me.
The movie speak for itself.
Yeah. I'm totally... This movie gets a thumbs up from me. This is one of those movies that one of the reasons why I do this podcast, to like go back to like these movies. This is like one of those movies that like if somebody asked me what kind of movies we cover, like this is it. This is like it perfect.
Favorite scene?
I will have to say the opening introduction of Dr. Death, where he saws the lady in half, moves her soul. You see Mo Howard's final moments on camera. a close runner-up, though, is the severed head package.
You already talked about it, but him getting stabbed in that black shit.
Oh, yeah, actually, oh, fuck, yeah.
That is like, it was so, it was just so gross.
That's when you know we have a good movie, when we can, it's hard to pick your favorite moment, you know, when there's like three or four of them to choose from.
Yeah, mine is a toss-up between the black blood vomitorium, evil dead, face melting, and the sawing of the lady.
Yeah.
I mean, what an effect. The sawing was kind of funny because it seemed kind of convenient. It's like, you know what? Let's do the theater. We have the box to saw someone in half.
Yeah, why not?
We still are doing the trick that everyone knows, but we're just going to make it bloody as shit.
He's like, of course, in my version, I actually saw the girl.
My version is real.
I think wait, later on, when he's got her trying on lingerie...
Oh, yes.
And the older lady comes in to talk to him, and he's like, "I'm busy."
He also gives another slap to the face where she's just like, "Sorry, I didn't mean to distract you." And he's like, "Oh, no, you didn't."
Oh. I really like, to go back, how I like the makeup in this movie. The girl who gets sawed in half, She was a girl that had chemical burns all over her face. That's why she wants to leave her body and go into another one. And when they show her, she looks ghastly. All the special effects are good. Like they're dated and campy, but still wet and gruesome and putrid.
Oh man! And then see some of the. I was thinking like some of the jokes were just kind of like ugh, like the homosexual guy or guy who's
I forgot all about him.
And he goes up to Dr. Death and he's just like, you can chop me up into little pieces as long as I get to go into something like that. And it's like the pretty girl, and I'm just like, okay.
And the worst part is like Dr. Death's like homophobic reaction.
Yeah, he's just like whatever.
Not that Dr. Death could talk. He's been in women's bodies.
Yeah. He said he enjoyed it.
Yeah. Anything else to say about Dr. Death?
No, there wasn't a whole lot to dig up for it. So
no, but...
It's just kind of the movie is what it is.
I hope we turn some people onto it, because it's fun. It's
Even though I kind of was sitting there just baffled, it's one of those movies, like I said, I can't bring myself to just be like, just openly ignore this one.
Yeah, but that baffling ridiculousness of it is strong. And unlike a lot of movies that we cover on here, it's not boring. Like, it's always kind of like doing something.
I see this movie, if it was watched with a big crowd, would get so many laughs.
I absolutely. This would rule at like the 24-hour marathon.
So are we done with Dr. Death then?
Yeah, I guess so.
Guess we're moving on.
All right, so our second movie is what, Joe?
Stefano arrives in a village in northern Italy to perform a job that he's been hired for. Restore a fresco painting on an old church wall that depicts the martyr's death of Saint Sebastian. Stefano will soon discover, however, that deadly secrets surround this painting and that his life is in grave danger.
All right. Before we get to anything, I just want to know... I want just yes or no answers, because I'm very curious about this.
Okay.
Did you guys like this movie?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Good. All right. We're all on the same thing.
Okay.
I was
not sure if you would or not.
Oh, no, no, no. All right. It's hard for me to pinpoint down exactly why I really like it, but then it's great, but I can see why other people wouldn't like it. You know what I mean? Like, it's a very slow burn. Yes.
And honestly, the first, I'd say maybe half of the movie was kind of like, it's my fear of giallo movies, where it is just so slow and nothing really cool happens for a bit, where it's enough to kind of like push me away. But I feel like if you stick in there,
it's worth. This movie, it reminds me of when Martin Scorsese, I read, he was talking about his favorite Mario Bava movie, which was Kill Baby Kill. And he's like, it's my favorite Bava movie. I've seen it 4 times and I cannot tell you what it's about, but I love it and it's great. And this is one of those movies where like already after watching it, the not the plot itself, but like the mechanics of it, of like who gets where and why this person's involved, fades almost immediately. But like the flavor of the movie stays in my head for days.
Yeah.
It has this like sinister, dreadful atmosphere. Like there's always feels like something's lurking around. There's always something horrible that's about to happen, or you're just like leading up to something awful.
Yes.
And not only that, but the movie has this like eerie, quiet stillness to it that just sets it apart from everything else. Like a lot of movies would suffer from that, but this one, a lot of movies, if they're not handled correctly, it'll just be boring. But this one, like the stillness of it, it actually just makes it like it gets under your skin.
Yeah, that's the difference between, you know, a bad script and a script designed to make you have to deal with the surroundings that it puts you in.
Yeah, and the movie itself takes place in a pretty interesting location.
Yeah, no, well, that's one of my favorite things about the movie is the whole town is just this, like, cadaverous, lifeless thing that, like, every building is weather-beaten and just forgotten, and all, like, the locals are just, like, weird and, like, in the background. It reminds me a lot of Who Can Kill a Child, where it's just, like, it takes place, like, in the spring, but it's not that, like, bright, happy spring. It's just this kind of, like...
It's a bit deserted.
Yeah, it's just... I don't want to say quaint, but it's just, like, almost, like, melancholy...
And it kind of... It does remind me of a lot... Like, it's like a tourist town with no tourists.
Yes, you know? Yeah, yeah. Or it was a tourist town, and nobody fixed anymore, the paint. Yeah. You know, nobody ever fixed anything up, and it's just, like, everything's just, like... It looks like every building, the paint on the walls is chipping. Everything looks old. Everything looks forgotten. Nobody's around. And it works. It makes the movie look really creepy.
I remember I had asked you about this movie years ago. And I remember that you remembered it being good, but that you couldn't really remember much about it. And then I finally watched it, I don't know, maybe like a year or so after that. And I had a reaction to it where it was like the key points of it stuck with me, but I wasn't sure that I liked the movie as a whole. But there was enough there for me to be like, okay, I'm going to come back to this at some point because I feel like I'm supposed to like this movie. And then on the subsequent viewing and then this time watching it, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those movies, like a lot of Italian horror movies for me, the way it feels is a trillion times more important than what it's about. And I also like, the movie's about a guy who's restoring a painting. A lot of the imagery it looks like paintings. Like, it looks like the guy is just, like, stuck in a painting. Like, it's not, like, there's no, like, energetic camera work. Like, that's when, like, the stillness of the movie comes to play, where there's a shot when he's in the hotel and we're in the outside looking in. We're, like, in a dark hallway and he's framed by his door frame.
Oh, yeah.
He's in the room and that's the only light and he's just surrounded by darkness of this dark hallway. And not only does it look like a painting, but it just shows that he's trapped in a really bad, dark place. And it just says it, like, just these few little shots.
Yeah, and he can only see as far as, like, a couple feet in front of him.
Exactly, exactly. Like, there's always something. Like, there's another one. He has sex with the teacher in the beginning, and then you see them, like, laying in bed. And, like, originally, like, when the shots that are in the room look like a movie, but afterwards, there's just this, you know, this medium shot of the whole room. And
it's just silent.
Yeah, but it looks, like, even the colors look different. Like, it looks like they're trapped in a painting.
Yeah, it like, has, yeah, it's, like, faded colors.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just a little dumb thing to laugh at, but I do like when he comes to the town and, you know, the teacher is obviously kind of like trying to catch his eye.
Yeah.
And his friend tells him, you know, like, everyone's
everybody there. Yeah. There's nobody else on the island.
And I feel like in another movie they'll be like, oh, okay, maybe, you know, I should keep my distance, you know, that's the girl.
Oh no.
But in the next scene he's in bed with her. He's just like, that's for the tip.
Yeah, exactly. All right. This movie gets credited as a giallo. And there's a lot of things that, like, the main plot is a guy trying to solve a murder mystery. That's you get threatening phone calls, which is a giallo thing. Red herrings, people that have information that's going to be helpful but end off getting dispatched. A tape recorder, that's like a big thing. Mm-hmm. Did anybody drink J&B in this movie?
Oh, yeah, I didn't notice that.
I didn't see that. That's one thing. Have you ever caught that, Joe?
No.
If you watch a giallo movie, 99% of giallo movies has somebody drinking J&B in one scene.
Really?
Keep an eye for it.
Okay.
Or you'll see it. Or you'll see it in the background. dead right. serious.
I'm sure if you go back to the bar restaurant scene, it's somewhere.
Maybe. I'll keep an eye on it, but that's like the one thing. But anyway, outside of that, Giallo moved to, correct me if I'm wrong, because to me this while it shared some characteristics of a Giallo, it just didn't play like one to me. And the main reason is Giallo movies are very hip or they're very sleazy.
Right.
Or both, but they're alive. There's something going on. Sure. You have like these set pieces of murder that are, you know, they're just done. They're energized. Soundtracks are very sometimes they're like they're jazzy and fun. And I just want to say like they're alive. They feel right. alive. This movie feels fucking dead. Like, it is just, like, it feels more like a supernatural horror movie, even though there's no supernatural elements. It's just, like, it feels like walking in a deserted graveyard on a gloomy day. Like, this movie captures that atmosphere, like, perfectly.
Yeah. It almost feels like kind of like a proto-Giallo for whatever reason.
Yeah, even though, yeah. Even
but it's
though
it was not. Like, it's But yeah, like just to reiterate, yeah, I feel like there is some sort of spectrum of style and sleaze, and this one really doesn't fall anywhere in that.
Yeah, and another, like Don't Torture a Duckling, Lucio Fulci's Giallo movie was like this one where it's in a rural town, but even that had stylized violence and things like that. It wasn't, this movie is just a lot more, it just feels decrepit. Like it feels in, at home in that creepy, desolate town.
In my book, it's still a Giallo, though.
I can see it, but if I had to make a spectrum, it's like, well, in the outer rim.
Well, it's not okay. The way I look at it is that, like, not so much that it's at like the outer rim. I just think of it of it's someone found a different way to do it.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah, that's a good point. I think a lot of it has to do with Giallos for me. That, like, decorum has a lot to do with it. There's something, like, fashionable about Giallo movies. If you look at, like, Blood and Black Lace and Tenebrae, you know, like, that, like, the European styles and, like, what's the word I'm looking for of, like, how a room is designed?
Just, like, the interior design, yeah, architecture.
Yeah, but, like, it's very stylistic. And you know what I mean? You look at Deep Red and stuff like that. You have like, these kind of scenes where the decorum is...
Yeah, there's, like, a sense of fashion to it, almost.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this movie doesn't have that, and that just, like... But brings it back even further to me.
But by the definition of what a Giallo is, it fits the definition.
You're right. You're right. I'm just saying.
What say? Do you know the definition? Like a definition offhand?
Well, yeah, Joe. Give us your definition.
Well, and if for anybody who doesn't know, the word Giallo is from the Italian meaning yellow, which has to do with the. The crime novels that the first Giallos were based on typically had yellow covers, which is how they got their name. They were named after the book covers that were almost always yellow. And, you know, they're essentially they're murder mysteries. And in the film world, there's usually police procedural angles to it, and then there's the conventions that you've mentioned, and you know, usually the killer also has like black gloves and you know, hats and trench coats and things like that.
It doesn't always have to be police, though. A lot of times amateur sleuth, which is a big
what this one also has.
It has amateur sleuth. Yes. Yeah,
right.
I prefer amateur sleuth to the police in Giallos. Although I love police procedures, but like when it comes to it feels more dangerous when it's just like a guy out of his element.
Right.
Right. Well, like David Hemmings in Deep Red is infinitely more entertaining than probably any police that I've seen in any of these movies. But you know, you can't. Yeah. It's a little unfair to throw Deep Red at something like for a comparison because, you know, that's just like, yeah, you can't do that.
That's my favorite Giallo, far and away.
Deep Red.
Yeah. It's my favorite Italian horror movie.
It's it's like the everything about the giallo turned up to
11
yeah. and done, and
it's the giallo's what Texas Chainsaw Massacre is to backwoods American horror, I'd say.
And how would you classify Blood and Black Lace? Because I feel like Blood and Black Lace is also deserving of an equal
Blood and Black level. Lace is definitely in my top five. I never did a list or anything, but if off the top of my head, Deep Red, Tenebrae, and Blood and Black Lace, I know for a fact are on there.
Okay.
On the opposite side of the spectrum, would you ever say like Pieces is a giallo movie?
Not even close, though? No.
Okay.
That's Pieces, Pieces is a slasher movie.
Yeah, it's Italian slasher though, right?
Spanish.
Is it Spanish?
Okay. It borrows elements though.
Yeah. Oh yeah. More so than many other slasher movies, but not every whodunit slasher movie is a giallo.
But don't all giallos have kung fu teachers?
Who ate bad chop suey?
Yes. But House with Laughing Windows, it is firmly a giallo, but it's one that is done from a different perspective. One that's got like it's sort of like
somebody broke the template.
Yeah, like they saw what Argento had done and just sort of said, okay, well, I'm not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to find some other way to do it. Apparently the director had a story in mind, like something that he had heard about when he was a kid. That was the inspiration mm-hmm. for this, which the fact that, we haven't really talked about what goes on in the story exactly, so I guess we'll get to that in a minute, but the idea that this is based on like something that actually happened is really fucking creepy to me.
Really? Okay, so it is, there's some truth to it.
Yeah, I don't know what the actual,
very loosely, I know it has to do with an exhumation of a priest.
Yeah, there's something with a priest, and do we ever actually find out in the story, like, because they talk about the priest doing the fresco, but like, it was the guy actually a priest, or was it just said that he was, and he was really just a psychopath who
it's a she.
Well, I was gonna get to that.
I don't know. I guess he's been working. What I want to know is the whole town in on it or not?
Well, because they all ignore him when he's asking for help, the protagonist. He's running through the streets talking about being injured.
But if they're all in on it, why did they hire this guy to restore this painting in the first place?
I felt it was almost kind of like a weird like sacrifice or something like that.
Yeah, like a Wicker Man thing. They had to lure him there so that they could.
I was thinking, but like it was pretty long-winded. They could have just stabbed him on the fucking boat.
Yeah,
but then you don't get the fun stuff.
I know, it's just
but it could have just, okay, so what the sister says towards the end of the movie is that they originally had planned
the girl
to be
the
part of the ritual, so he could have just been hired there legitimately to redo the painting and then just got caught up in it.
Well, yeah, but they needed that painting covered because it shows who the two killers are,
right?
So
yeah, I don't really. I'm trying to figure out where is he supposed to finish it some other way, and he wanted to restore it to what the
I had a feeling that a lot of people knew that there were these crazy killers lurking about, and they didn't want to get involved. Yeah. That would make more sense to me, because on the other hand, like if they knew who the killers were, and there were just these two elderly women, which turns out like I wouldn't be scared at all. I don't want to sound like a chauvinist pig, but if I found out, like, oh, the two elderly women in the neighborhood are the murderers, I'm like, oh, okay, so, like, I'll just out wrestle, beat two elderly women in a fight. Like, I'll probably
fall down somewhere.
Yeah,
you say that, but people who are that crazy have uncommon strength often because they're crazy.
Is there any truth to that? Do crazy people have super strength?
It's mind over matter. If you, it's a way, like, you know, if you're nuts, like, you don't necessarily know what your limitations are, and by that sort of power of suggestion, you know, sometimes can just transcend what your limitations should be. It's like a woman, you know, being able to, like, lift a car partially up to save her kid or something.
Also, one time I met this, like, 80-year-old nun, and she shook my hand, and she crushed my hand, and I was like, I think this 80-year-old lady can take me. Like, my ass. This old nun.
When we... I just want to bring this up, because it made me chuckle a little bit. Not because it was funny, but it just made me chuckle. When the girlfriend teacher lady ends up getting raped.
Yes. By my favorite character in the movie.
The weird psycho.
Not because he's a rapist, but because he's very entertaining to watch.
So she has now been ruined. As we mentioned, they were planning on using her for their nefarious purposes. And when Stefano finds her later, she's dead. She's suspended from the ceiling by
much like the Saint Sebastian,
with a knife sticking out of her.
Correct. So when he finds what was the character's name?
The crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't remember.
It escapes.
He just has my favorite line in the movie. Stefano's friend, who is one of the characters that does the classic I have information you need to know, meet me here, and then of course is killed. He has his funeral in the church, and this guy, this crazy rape degenerate simpleton, looks at the main character. He's like, I threw a live animal in his coffin so he'd have company. I thought that was my favorite part.
And
right,
I just
there.
Like how everyone just like slowly looks at the coffin, and you just hear the scratchings of the animal inside with him.
So we find what's being done to him as punishment for what he did. And he is also suspended and getting stabbed by a crazy nun. And the reveal of the formaldehyde chamber.
Oh, yes.
Made me laugh because it looked to me like the Tar Man.
Yeah.
Like, to the point that it actually made me wonder whether or not there was a deliberate a determination to make the Tar Man kind of look like the weird corpse in House with Laughing Windows.
It looks like something out of the Mutter Museum.
Yes.
Have you ever been to the Mutter Museum?
No, I'm not.
Do you know what the Mutter Museum is?
Yeah, vaguely.
All right. The Mutter Museum is a museum in Philadelphia that is a collection of medical abnormalities and oddities. And it is, I've been there twice. It's, I love it. There's like dead babies in jars, and the skeleton of the Elephant Man is there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like it's fantastic. I recommend, if any of you listeners ever go to Philadelphia, put that on your list. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, see that and then get out.
I took my mom there. She loved it.
Am I weird? Like, I have no interest in that place at all.
Really? I like it. I mean, it's not something like I have to go to like once a year, but the two times I went there,
yeah, but like, you know, like people that run in our circles, it seems to be like, you know, like it's the type of thing that everyone seems to like it, and I just am like, I just don't care about it.
My imagination runs wild in there, and that's like, that's I love it. A movie about a night watchman in the Mutter Museum after this new weird exhibit of medical abnormalities comes in is like prime horror movie.
You better copyright that.
Yeah. Don't you think so? Doesn't that sound, I always think about that every time I go in there. It's like, yeah, the night watchman and something's like scratching at the glass. I think that's like fucking creepy.
Especially if you just, you know, you have restraint with showing what's going on.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And it's not a CGI monster.
I wouldn't even show a monster. I'd make it. I'd you'd get like little glimpses. Do you remember that movie with Ewan McGregor where he's the morgue watchman?
No.
I can't remember the movie. It was like early, mid-90s. I want to say it's called Night Watch, but I could be mistaken.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
I haven't seen it since I was a fucking kid, but I remember it like being creepy. Like a necrophiliac murderer is like targeting him and framing him, but also like moves corpses around in the morgue when like he's at work.
Salute.
So he'll be like walking around and then all of a sudden he'll just see this like torn up carcass just laying down in the hallway. It just give him like a shock, and it works. It's startling. Anyway, back to the house with of a thousand corpses. All right.
House of a thousand corpses. Do you guys have a favorite scene you want to talk about? Are we at
the point? I'm just watching Joe
have a fucking sinus meltdown, attack.
Yeah.
He's rejecting
the soul that's trying to get into his body.
Get in there.
I command you.
The director, apparently he kind of loosely remade this later.
Oh, okay. He also won the Italian equivalent of the Oscars a few times.
Really?
Yeah. He's still working on movies. He's like 80 now.
Yeah, apparently the remake, I forget what the title is. I should have looked that up. But it's a period piece.
Well, this one takes place like 20 in the 50s.
No. Like,
oh, okay, like, even further.
Like hundreds of years.
Okay. I didn't catch that my first time watching this, but when I rewatched it for the show, I was like, oh wow, this is the 1950s. This isn't, you know.
Right, because you watch it and you're just like, oh, well, that's just what Italian people dress like.
Well, it's, wow, okay, yeah.
Did you catch that? No, yeah.
I thought it was like some city boy coming to
that's
that
what
country.
I thought, too. Yeah, yeah. I imagine like rural Italy in the 70s. Like, that's what it looks like in Don't Torture a Duckling, which, you know, like the one guy, he's like, yeah, the last person to stay in this hotel was a Nazi in the 40s. I was like, oh, yeah, wow, that's been a long time. And then realized, like, oh, like, no, this is like 10 years ago, according to this movie.
Yeah.
Anybody want to take a crack at how to say the director's
name? All right.
Okay.
I was about to say this. Can we just get out of the way that the guy's name's Poopy? Is that really how it is? I was hoping that you would have the real translation.
No, I think that's how it's said.
Well, that's not really his name. That's like his nickname.
It's on the title card.
Yeah, but I mean, Poopy. It's like it's a G name. Like,
well, he might want to go back to that.
Well, maybe in Italy, Poopy doesn't mean what Poopy means. And like, look up his Wikipedia.
I'm sure it doesn't. It's like, yeah,
it's Giuseppe.
That's Giuseppe.
Giuseppe, yeah. See, whatever.
That's Joseph.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is that your Italian name, Giuseppe?
That's what it would be, yeah.
What about mine? What's Italian for Jonathan?
I don't know what the equivalent would be for Jonathan.
The cell phone show.
I haven't even looked at the phone.
There's a video, a YouTube video that says how to pronounce Poopy Avati.
So. Avati?
That's his last name.
Put it up to the microphone. Poopy.
Poopy Avati.
I actually should have known this. Giovanni is
oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I can live that. Giovanni. Anyway, back to House of...
House with Laughing Windows.
Don't go in the House of Laughing Windows. Now, whoa. The painter in this burned himself to death.
Oh, and don't go in the house.
Don't go in the house. The guy's obsessed with burning things. Wow. Wow. That would be a good crossover movie. Don't go in the house with laughing windows. The house with laughing windows is a very small part of this fucking movie. And the one scene where he gets information in it, they don't even give like an exterior shot. So I didn't even know what house he was. What? I rewound it like a few times trying to figure out where this guy was.
Yeah.
When he finds the journal.
Right.
I'm still guessing. It was in that house, right?
Yeah, I think so. Oh, yeah. He the house had a lot of stuff that he was looking for, and his friend had mentioned the house.
Yeah.
Actually, the reveal of the front side of the house where it has all my favorite part.
Yeah,
of the
movie. It's really creepy.
And
the weird, like,
laughing
mouths painted on the
windows.
Yeah, it's really cool. And I remember kind of, like, before I even watched this movie, when I typed up, like, the house with the laughing windows, I saw that image, and I'm like, that's weird. I wonder where this is going to be. And, I really liked how they showed that.
I really like the soundtrack to this movie. It's not, it's very creepy, but without being intrusive. Like, a lot of, like if you listen to, like, Goblin or Fabio Frizzi's soundtrack, where they're, like, they dominate the movie. This one has, like, creepy little bits to it, but it always is just, like...
There's not a catchy theme.
Yeah, it's just, like, it fits each scene perfectly, and it just enhances, like, the creepiness, the stillness, too. Like, it's nothing... You know, it's not like the Suspiria score, where it's just domineering.
Which is kind of, like, another thing that kind of sets this movie aside from, like, I feel Italian, you know, slasher giallo movies, is because a lot of the ones I do, like, have that, like, really catchy, notable theme.
They're very hip, you know? Yeah. They're very... Like I said, they have a pulse. They feel alive. Yeah. And this movie...
It has something cool, but it's not your typical, you know... score.
Do you think this movie would have benefited with a cool murder set piece like Deep Red has, or you know, anything from the Animal trilogy?
No.
I think I agree with you.
No.
Oddly enough,
I think the way it is how it should be.
Yeah. I think it would just be too vibrant for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the fact that this is very drab is in the movie's benefit. I would say to cut off, like, 10 minutes. I would cut out the love plot with him and the teacher. Like, you could have her as a character without, like, the typical they end up in bed and say sweet things and they're in love.
Well, I think you could do away with some of that, and I would like to see a little bit more in the beginning, because you really don't see much in along the lines of people getting killed until kind of late in the movie. His friend gets thrown out of a window, and there isn't much else.
No, there are none. And the one guy, the other guy who gives them information, is found drowned.
Yeah, he just turns up dead, you know, and it's just like, and I guess that it's very different, you know, and and they start off, I mean, the title sequence is like some dude getting stabbed again.
That's actually one of my favorite parts. Like, right in the get-go, you have this title sequence that's like nightmarish and gloomy. And I that's where I was going with that joke.
When you guys said something about the murder, like, set, what did you say? The
set pieces of murder.
What do you mean by that?
You know, all right, name a giallo you've seen so we can be on the same page here.
You could just say Deep Red.
Deep Red, okay. You know what a set piece is?
Yeah, no, go ahead, describe
it to me. Rafifi, the heist movie.
Okay.
The heist is a set piece.
Okay.
You know, like, it's Joe, help me out with this here. I'm trying to describe set pieces and I'm drawing a blank.
It's like,
is it kind of like the main scene that requires like the most choreography and kind of just like the
But it doesn't have to be the main scene.
Yeah, it's just it's a spot in the movie where there's like a sequence that's constructed to be a look at me sequence.
It's like say a film is a necklace. And it's like one of the diamonds. Okay. That scene is like one of those scenes where it's a, and like when you watch a giallo film, the murder scenes are like that. They're very stylistic. Right. They're very, you know.
You always know they're coming too.
Yeah. You know? And
well, not always, but sometimes you can tell. You can be the movie's coming
to that scene. Mm-hmm. And what we were saying is this movie doesn't have any of those. And oddly enough, while that would make some other.
Yeah.
Movie's boring. This one, actually, the fact that it's just so drab and lifeless is actually to the movie's advantage.
Gotcha. Yeah, I feel like this movie doesn't. It might just be because there's really no murders.
Yeah, that's. Hang on.
Well,
I'm going to read the definition of a set piece. So,
okay.
A thing that has been carefully or elaborately planned or composed, in particular. A self-contained passage or section of a novel, play, film, or piece of music arranged in an elaborate or conventional pattern for maximum effect.
Okay.
So when you watch Deep Red, you can tell the murder scenes are, you know, like they're very operatic. Yes.
Yeah, that's why I mentioned like maybe like the choreography, like it's like that.
Yeah, exactly. You know? But all everything like set design, well, not always set design, but I mean that can come to play. Like when you watch like I said with Rafifi, the heist scene is like the set piece.
Right.
When you watch a Shaw Brothers scene, sometimes like fights are mundane, but then you get to like that one the fight. Yeah, exactly. That's the set piece.
Gotcha.
You brought up the title sequence. I just wanted to read.
Okay.
The weird narration that happens.
Yes.
The translation of it. My colors, they run red hot in my veins. Soft, so soft. My colors are soft like the fall. Hot like fresh blood. The liquid flows down my arms. My colors, the yellow decay. My colors flow through my veins. My colors in my veins. Creating a brutal nobility. God, my colors will paint death clearly. Death, purity. Death, purification. Holding me at their mercy. My colors, yellow, soft, dripping from their eyes. Purity. Purity of death. My colors. That, I think, really goes a long way to putting you in the proper headspace for this movie, because there is something very unsettling about the way that those words are thrown together.
The guy's raspy voice helps a lot too. Like you can tell it's an unhinged guy. Like whoever they got to read that part, like really got it into character. Yeah. It's a great monologue. It's no Mortician lyrics, but it's it's pretty good.
Well, I was going to bring this up and take us on a tangent, but this, it kind of ties into like you and I like had a discussion before, like when I was trying to like put the idea across of like how Glenn Danzig's Misfits lyrics have this like weird primal quality, but also seem very deliberate at the same time. This is kind of in that vein where it's like it almost feels like just a stream of consciousness coming out, but at the same time it also seems like it's carefully put together at the same time.
Yeah, like it has a like a poetic feel to it.
I don't know what you, if there's a term to describe.
It's sort of like that. When I think there is for what I'm about describing, but when like you're writing and you don't think about what you're writing, you just let your subconscious take over. It has that kind of.
But yeah, the structure though being like maybe you just being familiar with how prose.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's weird. And they play it throughout the movie, that the recording of that weird
voice.
That's
my favorite scene, is when he goes up to that top floor of the house and finds that. I know, yeah,
that's mine.
Yeah, also. It's nothing really goes on, but it the atmosphere, that feeling, that paranoid feeling that something evil is lurking just out of frame is like all on full blast in that part.
Yeah, it's like the movie has that going on constantly, and then there's scenes where the dial gets turned up on it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Like it's always set at like a 4, and then sometimes it gets turned to varying degrees up more and more.
Exactly, and that works, because when it's quiet, it's still, I probably said it's like 95 times, but the stillness of it, like that kind of eerie, is like a different flavor eerie, and it's almost kind of more effective that way. That's more like under your skin, but then the scene we're talking about, it's like it's trying to claw out like the fucking chest burster from Alien, where it's just like so much. And I love how like for odd reasons, it has this like supernatural feel where like windows and gates like shut themselves for no reason. It's sort of like,
oh yeah,
when you're playing GoldenEye and you open a door and you, like, it stays open for a bit, but as you're walking around, like, the doors shut themselves. You know, like, yeah. It has like that,
and it kind of freaks you out.
Yeah.
And then Oddjob is stabbing a guy hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah. That would be more Don't Look Now. Oh, speaking of that, wow, that's a good way to go in there. The use of the color red in this movie, the red car, the red motorcycle, the red bedstand for the first teacher, in the hotel when he gets the threatening calls, like, or I know when he gets called back from Francesca after she's dead, but they're using the tape.
Right.
It's a red, like, red wallpaper and everything. It's actually like the only place in the whole village where it actually like seems kind of clean, like the wall isn't just like decaying. And then of course all the blood from the murders, but like every time there's something red, like it's just a guy being led to his doom or into like another like dark chapter of the story.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was intentional or...
I'm sure it was.
I think so, too, because movies seem... Like, everything about it...
Yeah, and the main house has, like, all those red lips on it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The everything seems, like, composed, which is... or composed to... You know, it wasn't like somebody grabbed handheld and tried to catch shots. Like, everything seemed... They seem to be very mindful about it.
Yeah, some structure to it.
This movie was made because the director made like a sex comedy that was caught by the censors and they refused to release it. So he needed a movie and quick, and he shot this like super fast with like a small crew and everything. And like
a sex movie,
yeah, not like a porno, but like a I don't know if it was like a sex comedy or something, but apparently it took place in like in a bordello. And the Italian censors refused to release it, so he needed another movie like really quickly, and he just like kind of just threw this one together, which is with the result doesn't look like it at all. But
yeah. Now it definitely seems like something that was carefully crafted over time.
I wonder because when I think too hard on the plot, like I find little like holes or things that just don't make sense to me. If he had like, if this was like a studio movie where they gave him like a full year just to work on this movie, I wonder if the story, if it was like leaner and tighter, if it would help or hurt.
I don't know. I feel like it exists the way that it is for a reason. Like that's how it should be the way that it is.
I feel like it could be tightened up a little bit though.
Yeah, but not that like I'm still confused like who's on whose side in this movie and stuff and like who really is responsible for what.
I think that's deliberate
though. Yeah, that's true. I think you're probably right. Mm-hmm.
It gives you
that confused headspace.
I don't know if there's a reason for this or not, but I'll just throw it out there in case you guys have thoughts. But why is it that Italians seem to have such a firm grasp, either whether they like it or not, on just dread and darkness? Like, I feel like they do it better than anyone else.
I could be mistaken, but I think they're the people that uncovered the idea that for horror, how it, like for this genre, making the audience feel a certain way is a lot more important than what it's about. Like a lot of horror, especially American ones, are so based on the plot. You know, and they're like, well, how do we make this plot scary? And then they're spending so much time trying to make things logical, or while Italian horror just has no problem just being like, no, this is nightmare logic. This is imagery and the soundscape, all of that combined to make just these like... But I can't pinpoint why they have that dread. It's mostly like the low budget ones, though.
Well, it's not even just movies. It's just there seems to just be a general sort of attitude. Like, even if like that was like a filmmaking formula, it's still the types of imagery and things that come up are still like, I feel, uniquely Italian. Like, only like the stuff like in Fulci movies like would only happen in an Italian guy's brain somehow.
I think
the iconography and things like that are somehow like, I just feel that that's a thing that they do and no one else really does it like that way.
Another thing, and I always often wondered this, I think, especially when I was a kid, the fact that they were Italian movies gave them an otherworldly feel. Like, I, when I was a kid, I wasn't like a cultured kid, you know, so I wasn't thinking like, oh, this is like a movie that takes place, or this movie's filmed by people from another country, so it's going to be feel different from what I'm used to. Yeah. It just felt like...
it's just foreign.
Yeah,
it's
exactly. But almost. I wasn't thinking that. So it's just like the movies felt weird to me. And that also kind of, in a weird way, increased the horror to me.
Like, I know there just even certain little things like arcades, and like an Italian movie, it looks like some weird bizarro world. Just something that's like more commonplace for here just looks completely different.
But not even that. Even like the Fulci ones, which all take place in America, they still like, they have this European slant to them that makes them look otherworldly.
Yeah.
Like fucking Fulci's New England and Gates of Hell, which is really shot in Georgia, which is another thing to make it like off kilter. His, you know, it's just like, it's sort of like your country, but seen through the eyes of a foreigner who only has dimes and nickels to put it on screen. So it just goes through like these different phases of to make it really kind of otherworldly to you. Joe, you're an Italian. Will you explain to us? What the fuck am I talking for? Mamma mia, come on.
Come on, poopy.
I'm only half.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm behind a paywall because I'm only half.
Yeah. But so like, you can't be a made man?
No. It's not just... I don't know. I'm looking deeper than just in movies. Like,
I understand
there's like a certain... like there's almost like a... like a...
next time,
like a doomsday cloud hanging over their psyche somehow.
Next time you have one of these heavy questions, hit me with it like 3 days before we do it, and I'll prepare myself for it. Maybe it's because it's a very religious country.
Yeah, I feel like it's somewhere in that, but like other countries are also religious and don't come up with.
Yeah, well, maybe that could
so visceral.
It could be like a stew where it's like that and this and that over there.
Yeah, I want to work out the formula.
I want to fucking drink it when you do too.
I'm gonna sit down and crunch the numbers. And
if I ever make a movie, I'm going to Italy.
I will get back to you.
I am going to take dirt from Fulci's grave, and then when the movie's like in the editing room, like sprinkle it all over so I can get
just
like
give it,
that.
Some evil.
Yeah.
Just
like,
just get in there.
It'll be like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh,
they're watching were watching the dailies, and like one day they looked at the dailies. And
it was the movie was done, and they were doing like the sound design.
Oh, okay.
And they left, and then they walked out, and they watched it again, and if like for some reason some evil thing just whisked right into it, and they're like, because I have a great book. It's the Texas Chainsaw Massacre Companion, and they interview like a lot of people involved with it. And it was one of the ladies doing like, it was sound design or something like that, or it was like color timing. It was something like in the process of the editing room. And she's like, you gotta understand, like, I knew everybody involved. I knew Toby Hooper. I knew like the actor, like I was even on set. And so when I was watching the movie, I was just watching people I knew, a product they made. And then, like, one time she sat down and watched it again, and whatever happened, like, in the 20 minutes she was gone, just this little, like, evil, like,
just
demon. Just like,
itself.
Yeah, just like, and she was like, dude, and then she saw the movie that we see, and she's like, yeah, I get it. I understand why that's a fucking scary fucking movie. All right. I feel like we kind of segued off, but that's not bad. I like conversation.
Sure.
All right. Favorite part. What's your favorite part, Andrew?
I said it before. It's the House of the Laughing Windows reveal. Like that
you see when he's walking by.
The faces on the windows.
I really like the very beginning. It sets the tone perfectly.
The title sequence, yeah.
I do like it when he finds the two killers and she unveils the dead painter and she's just going on and on about.
Well, I like when you find out that the priest is the other sister.
Yes, yes.
Right? And I'm just sitting there with my arms crossed when they change the pitch of the priest, who's obviously a man's voice, to a woman's voice, where they change it. And I'm just kind of sitting there like, you know, I don't know if I'm convinced, you know?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he just rips his shirt and just reveals this titty. And I'm like, all right, there you go. They took it another fucking level.
Yeah. At the very end, you can hear police sirens approaching.
Yeah.
Do you think he's going to be rescued?
Do you see? Don't you see a hand resting on the tree? And then it's just freeze. I don't know.
I have to look at that again.
Anyway, yeah, I guess they were coming. Is it the mayor who's the creepy, weird little guy?
He's the dwarf.
He's the one who ends up calling the police yet ignores, I know we're kind of trying to wrap it up, but he's ignoring the protagonist's pleas for help, and then, but he calls the police.
Yeah.
So the police are coming for
to help? Or,
I have no clue.
Yeah, it's ambiguous. Joe, what do you think? You think he's doomed?
Yes.
Because if the cops are in on it, why would they even bother going through their whole charade of digging up where what happened to the mass grave? Remember, he sends the cops there. And,
well, they walk away and then you see a jaw.
Yeah, maybe they just pretended not to see it.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe the ones who cleaned it up.
All right. Well, all right. So Dr. Death versus House with Laughing Windows.
I'm taking House.
Okay. Joe?
I will say House with Laughing Windows, but with the caveat that I will probably go back to Dr. Death before I go back to House.
It's easier to digest.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that. All right, kids. You wanna send them off with some info?
Sure.
Mr. Calvo?
Yeah, if you look for Late Night Psychorama anywhere, we're on Facebook, Instagram. Our email address is latenightpsychorama@gmail.com. Night spelled NITE. Just reach out to us.
Has anybody done that yet?
No.
Do you even check the email? I've never.
What's, I do.
Or don't tell me the password on here, but when we turn it off.
Sure.
1234 5 6.
Yeah. Password 1234.
That's all my passwords at work.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, kids. Have a good one.
Have a good night.
God bless.
Bye now. Fire in the woods, dread. Fear of the rat. Dead beginning of the night. Bleeding the dread. Reviewing things dead.